Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and today we have a very special guest. Doug Duncan is the Senior Vice President and Chief Economist for Fannie Mae. He's responsible for managing Fannie Mae's Economics and Strategic Research Group. In this leadership role, Duncan provides all economic housing and mortgage market forecasts and analysis and serves as the company's thought leader internally and with external constituent groups. Doug, we welcome back to our show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Shadow inventory, that's been a topic forever, and it's probably changed definitions over the years. A lot of people are still absolutely adamant there's just going to be an avalanche of inventory that either banks have been hiding on the shelf or had refused to foreclose on, and they're going to, and then we're going to have this glut of inventory. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I keep hearing the statements and reading the commentary on the flood of bank REO. Obviously, we have quite a bit of REO in our own book, and I do know about that. I think those are stories that are needlessly desperate, and that's probably too strong a word. But if you look at the flow of data, what you see is that there's clearly a decline in seriously delinquent loans. The decline has been greater in states which have non-judicial foreclosure processes than those which have a judicial foreclosure process. And in both cases, the share or the level of seriously delinquent loans is still significantly higher than a normal level. But what's not happening is a floodgate being opened and a sudden flow of those properties. It's a process that keeps grinding away, and the properties are coming to market. There's a variety of reasons why it might take longer than people expect and why there's not a flood. I'm in Florida. The problem here is the pace of moving the properties through the courts. If they were to suddenly hire 150 retired judges or something and put them only on those issues, you might see a significant increase in the pace. But even there, all of the legal hurdles have to be met before the properties come to market. So we just don't see that as a likely scenario. We do believe they'll continue at the margin to add to supply, but we just don't see a sudden flood of property.
Now, you mentioned that delinquency is still quite a bit above normal, but a lot better than it was. So do you have percentages for, like, the worst where we were and where we are now?
I don't have them right in my head.
That's okay. But I guess one of the things I wanted to mention and see if you feel this is true is that somebody being delinquent, especially somebody that has the capacity to make the payment, when prices go up and make them whole, that's either going to result in somebody making the payments current more often or at least in a sale that doesn't result in a loss.
Yeah, that's right. That's absolutely right. And we had talked at a different point about this, is it a good time to sell question. And if you are delinquent and underwater but suddenly discover that you might not be any longer underwater, that's going to change the incentive for you to bring the loan current. Either to be able to dispose of the property with no loss, or it may change your attitude about staying in the property. So no question that will be an improvement.
Yeah, there's always, even in 2000, let's say 2001, 2, and 3, you always had delinquencies, but they didn't convert to losses just because prices were escalating. Now, we've had a pretty good year, even nationally, as far as year-over-year price gain. California, we've had a ridiculous one. Now we have no sooner did we get off the mat than somebody saying, "Okay, we're in another bubble."
Right. Yep.
So, what's your take on the bubble talk?
Yeah, we just don't see it. We think that the current pace of price appreciation is a function of curtailment on supply. The builders are not building properties fast enough. You're not seeing that flood of delinquent properties onto the market. You've seen some significant conversion of properties from owner-occupied space into the rental space. So there's a variety of things on the supply side that are driving that. And we see that tailing off some over the next couple of years, but we certainly don't see this as a bubble. The one, the one thing that some folks are worried about, and I can understand that from a monetary economics perspective, is whether or not the Fed has artificially driven up demand in some way through monetary policy, and when they start to normalize monetary policy, that might take some air out of the housing market. Now, I don't necessarily see that, just because I just don't see the supply phenomenon fixing itself in the near term.
Help explain when you say the Fed and their monetary policy. I know that they have the short term rates basically at zero, but we just had an interest rate hike happen, and no one really changed anything other than verbally maybe the sentiment of the future, an expectation that there might be less participation. What does the Fed do to, you know, what did they do to drive the interest rates down where they were? And what's changing about that?
Well, you're absolutely right. They set the target Fed funds rate, which is the rate at which banks lend to one another overnight, at essentially zero, technically between zero and 0.25%.
Right.
They've held that there for a long time, which is an encouragement for lenders to put money into the market. And then in addition to that, they had taken several actions that have been described as quantitative easing. That means that they have gone into the market themselves and purchased assets from investors to put cash in the hands of those investors for them to infuse that into the economy. Most recently, they've been purchasing $85 billion monthly. That is $45 billion of treasury securities and $40 billion of mortgage-backed securities. That too, is intended to put downward pressure on rates, and that certainly has happened. The first iteration of that was the most effective, and that was a couple of years ago. And the subsequent iterations have been less effective, but they've kind of been partnered with the flight to quality from investors in Europe, where Europe has had all kinds of fiscal problems, and investors have come to the U.S. market. That also has helped push interest rates down as well. So about four Fed meetings ago, when the minutes to those discussions are released 3 weeks after the Fed meets at one of its meetings, and about four meetings ago, when the minutes were released, the minutes revealed that the Fed governors had discussed having to decide how to end the program.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't decide how to end it. They simply discussed having to decide.
Right.
And that led to 4 days of instability in rates and spread just from the release of those minutes. So we kind of warn people, when it comes time that the Fed actually devises a plan, even if they don't execute it, you should expect more instability. Well, you know, Chairman Bernanke simply discussed a plan here a couple of months ago, and boy, that created quite a turn in the psychology of the market.
Yeah, and that no one changed any interest rates. It just, they talked about when they might not participate, or not even when, it just there'll be a day when they don't participate.
Exactly. And so that the market took that. They probably overinterpreted it, but I don't expect the Fed to go out and try to take that back. But it represented a shift in sentiment among investors that suggests the Fed is going to start tightening credit, or is the way the governors have talked about it, is reducing the amount of ease that they have in the market. And it was also paired with some discussions of the European Central Bank and the Chinese with regard to their monetary posture. So there was a sentiment among investors globally that the monetary ease across the globe is going to be reversed in the not-too-distant future. So they've started to adjust their investments and expectations accordingly.
What's the total amount of mortgage-backed securities or the other securities that you mentioned? What's the total now that the Fed owns?
Well, they own about 22% of all the outstanding mortgage-backed securities.
Okay.
And I think that's around, about $5
trillion. Okay, so $1.1
trillion? Yeah, that's right, about there.
I'm good at math. Sorry.
Yeah. I recently spoke to the governors at the outset of the meeting. I said it felt more like an investor relations meeting than an update on the housing market.
Now, but here's a good question. What happens to the value of those mortgage-backed securities? And are we talking bonds? What happens to the value of those when interest rates go up?
Well, certainly that's prices will fall. Prices are inverse to the rate. The thing is, the Fed doesn't have to hedge their portfolios. That's an important aspect of the market today that might be different than what you saw in 2003. And the Fed rebates its earnings to the Treasury, so it isn't the same as sort of a normal investor.
Do they rebate their losses too?
They will if they incur losses.
Okay.
They will do that as well.
Okay.
But I don't think you'll see them selling any of the securities out of their portfolio. I think what they will do is amortize them over the life. And they've been buying midterm kinds of securities.
Okay. I've been an investor since 1980-81. And when I decided I wanted to do it full time, I refinanced a house that I owned free and clear at 17.5% fixed. And and basically, ever since then, with some interruptions, we managed to work our way down to an almost 3% mortgage rate. And so I really have been used to mortgage rates falling my entire investment career. Now, looking forward, where we started at something at 3, the rate on a 30-year, I got this off of your website, 30-year fixed rate was 2.84 right at the beginning of the year, and now 3.86. Now, historically, 3.86 is still, oh my gosh, what a great rate, but it doesn't feel as good as 2.8.
Yeah, that's right.
But where is it? Where do you think it's going to? Where is the trajectory? Is it going to be gradually up for a long time, or is it going to hit something normal and then kind of stay there?
We believe that it will be gradually up for a while, but let's talk about where it stops by looking at what would constitute normal in the mortgage space. So if you start at World War II and go forward and average the 30-year fixed rate mortgage across that time period, what you have is a 6.5% mortgage. So how do you get to that 6.5% in a normal time period? Well, economists believe that the real earning assets, or the real interest rate, non-inflationary interest rate over time, is about 3%. You'll get some variation around that depending on their own personal opinion. But if you take that, add 2%, which is for inflation, which is the Fed's target, then you're at 5% for an intermediate term treasury. The spread for mortgages varies over time as well, but pick 150 basis points, that gets you to 6.5% for a mortgage. It'll be a while till we get there because the Fed's been real clear they don't anticipate raising the Fed funds target probably out until the beginning of 2015.
Mm-hmm.
And so you still have a year and a half with a 0% Fed funds target. And then when they start to raise it, unless something unusual is happening in the economy, it's not going to go from 0 to 4.5% with any great speed. Some folks are thinking that normal in terms of the Fed funds target and the portfolio, the Fed's portfolio, we probably won't see until 2020. You know, a lot can happen between 2013 and 2020. So,
one of the things that I did in just my own research was taking a look at how many changes the Fed had made every year since I started in the business. And naturally, when I started, it was 1980. It was very volatile. But the the Fed changed rates 21 times during one of those years. And I guess what's interesting about the investor that's gotten involved in the last 3 or 4 years is the one thing that they're not used to is volatility.
That's actually the thing we have, to my point about the earlier about the minutes of the Fed introducing the instability for those 4 days, just the release of the minutes, that is clearly a problem. And you saw, I think, in the last week about four Fed governors out speaking because of concerns related to the market's response with the introduction of volatility. But the Fed removed the volatility, so there's no way for markets to get back to normal without reintroducing that volatility. And there are a lot of folks who do not have experience in managing in that time in that environment.
The policies of Fannie Mae right now, as far as lending, the maximum loan amount that you guys have in the state of California is about how much? Is it it's over 600?
Yeah, I think it's about 625.
625
for single family property.
And we've been going up like crazy. Median price, we're over a little over 400,000, but having a Fannie Mae loan amount at 150% of median value is unusual, is it? Isn't it historically?
It is. Yes, that was a change that was made during the crisis. In fact, there were a couple changes made, and at one point the maximum loan size was $729,000. That was a temporary provision in the law which expired and dropped the ceiling back to $625,000. I think the changes were made because essentially the bulk of bank lending and private lending in the marketplace had frozen. And that at least on a broad-based volume basis, it was mainly FHA and the two GSEs that were providing the liquidity to the market, and policymakers decided to try to provide a cushion for housing through that increase in the ceilings.
And there's no doubt that that's been really vital.
Mm-hmm.
And now FHA,
yeah, I think so.
FHA has also had. They've become a big player because of their aggressive loan amount possible. In Riverside, $500,000 loan is possible. And when I checked it, we were at about 350 median price going backwards. Typically, when we had a 350 median price, we'd only have $160,000 FHA loan. So the FHA loan balance that's possible is way different than ever. Didn't it used to be sort of a formula off of Fannie Mae's maximum?
Yeah, it was, and they were also altered in the legislation to allow them to change it all. In fact, their ceiling is still 729, still above the Fannie Freddie limit. That's one of the questions when the determination is made on what to do with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac in the policy world. One of the things that hopefully will simultaneously be evaluated is the role of FHA. The theory on FHA has been that there are positive externalities to home ownership, and FHA is really a government-owned insurance program with a 0% risk-adjusted rate of return target, but that typically also meant a much lower maximum loan amount because of that positive externality to housing that there was a social purpose to allow lower income households or folks at the low end of the home price spectrum access to home ownership. 729 probably isn't that number.
No. well, the day that they decide to change that, will you let me know? I think that'll
right.
be a bad that'll be a bad day.
Yeah.
But in a way, you know, this is one of the problems. I mean, honestly, it's been a big help, but it also is hard to retract. I mean, how do you say, okay, we're going to go back to instead of 700 and something, then now the maximum loan amount is 200.
Exactly. That is the problem. Is how do you make the adjustment? And I think most people believe that the more private markets provide as opposed to the government, the better off we are. But once institutional arrangements become comfortable with things, it's very difficult politically to retract some of those changes. My guess is that if it were going to be addressed, there would be some sort of a phasing process. But of course, even that causes you certain kinds of disruptions. If you, let's say this year the limit is 729,000 and then next year it drops to 629,000, you've got a segment of FHA loans in that $100,000 difference that now have a little different life path than subsequent FHA loans,
right?
Because of the incentives.
What's the general consensus on the value of owning a home? So, I mean, we have Dodd-Frank just about being, you know, going to be fully implemented. So where's the emphasis? Let's let only people that really qualify own homes, or let's let everybody in, or somewhere in between?
Well, I think subsequent to the crisis, there's been a lot of rethinking about just how much emphasis to put behind home ownership from a policy perspective. I think that will come more into view as the discussion over what to do with the GSEs plays out, because if you're going to introduce a higher level of private capital, probably costs to consumers are going to rise, and that will bring back into focus the distribution of credit and some discussion of that. But I would say we won't go back to where we were when people were talking about using policy to get us to 72% home ownership. But I think there will also be counter pressure that doesn't create or that disallows a policy that would drop home ownership rates to 58% or something like that.
Okay.
Which has been one of the concerns.
We only have about a minute and a half left. Qualified residential mortgage, have we decided what the down payment will be?
We have not. And to our previous question and comment, sir, I think that's a key question. If you set the down payment at 20% with no gifts or something, I think you might have quite a different posture in the lending industry. And I think, in fairness, over the years at which automated underwriting tools were put into place, one of the things that was learned was that loan to value to some degree does proxy for other risk variables, which now we can break out. So I think there's a reason to suggest that it doesn't have to be a 20% down for it to be a safe loan.
Okay. So that's still under discussion. I mean, Dodd-Frank's sort of been in play for a while, but there's still arm wrestling going on.
So, you know, interestingly, this is the 100th anniversary of the Federal Reserve. Its authorizing legislation was 37 pages. Dodd-Frank was something like 1,300 pages. I'm not sure what that says.
Well, we know the lawyers are doing well in Washington. Doug, we've run out of time. I really appreciate you taking time to be with us. Doug Duncan with Fannie Mae, Vice President and Chief Economist. Thanks so much again for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.